You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
An article called Unseen Titanic is a cover story in this month's National Geographic magazine, and it's part of the commemoration of the 100th anniversary of the ocean liner's sinking that's coming up this Sunday, April 15th. Its author, Hampton Sides, joins us now to discuss the Titanic and what we're still learning about the wreck. And also with us is Jim Delgado, an expert on shipwrecks and undersea excavations and the director of Maritime Heritage for the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. He's in charge of a new project to digitally photograph and map the Titanic's crash site on the ocean floor. And I'm very pleased to welcome Hampton Sides and Dr. Delgado to our show today. Hello.
Good to be with you.
Hampton, the last time you were here, we were talking about Martin Luther King Jr. How much did you know about the Titanic before you started working on this article?
Very little. I think they hired me in a way to try to burrow into this subculture of Titanic freaks and geeks to try to understand why this shipwreck has given us, has been such a source of fascination for so long. And, you know, to try to understand where this wreck is going for the next 100 years.
And listeners are already writing in to ask why people are still fascinated with the Titanic after all these years. There have been other shipwrecks. You mentioned a roundtable discussion that you attended that included some of the top Titanic experts in the world. So has this become an area of scientific specialty?
Well, there are forensic experts who really get nitty-gritty on the question of exactly how the ship broke up. You know, that's one of the wings, I guess you'd say, of the Titanic subculture. There's lots of different folks who focus on different things, but yes, there is that group. They tend to be kind of wonky. They tend to be engineering people who really understand how the ship was built and where its stress points were, and they're very interested in, of course, we know it struck an iceberg, but everything else is a source of argument.
So there's exactly. Not general agreement within this group?
What is what?
There are still people disagreeing within that group?
Oh, yes. About everything that happened after the iceberg. Essentially, exactly, you know, all the little details about how the ship sank and certainly how it broke up. Because, and this all leads up to the article that I wrote, we have this image now of the entire wreck site down there, and you see for the first time every element, every davit, every crane, every piece of metal, and you begin to understand just how violent the breakup of the Titanic was. It was an extremely chaotic, extremely tumultuous thing, and I think, you know, many people think the wreck just sort of slipped beneath the waves and that was the end of the story, but no, it was extremely violent. And this image shows it really for the first time.
Now, Jim, you kind of laughed when Hampton said this group was wonky. I guess it's weird to hear yourself described in that way. Do you think of yourself as wonky because of your interest in the Titanic?
I guess my job is actually to be one of the shepherds for the wonks. And I say that with all due respect and love, because without the type of forensic detail that a lot of folks have brought to this, I think we wouldn't have as much of an understanding of Titanic as we do. And I think as an archaeologist who studies the past, I learned a long time ago that you're never really going to be able to completely reconstruct the past. You can come up at best with an approximation. And indeed, it's the type of debate that's happening with what happened on Titanic. I think that leads people to say, yeah, let's do more archaeology. But where I'm coming from is, while the important aspects of understanding the ship's breakup are there, I'm asking some other questions about what's left of Titanic, how Titanic's going to change over time, and what we can learn from Titanic above and beyond the mechanics of the ship, or exactly how it broke apart.
Well, how does the Titanic compare to the other shipwrecks you've excavated and explored?
Well, Titanic is certainly one of the more modern shipwrecks that I've had an opportunity to look at, but all shipwrecks, regardless of their age, represents an important thing that I think we need to focus on, and that is their floating communities, communities full of people. And I know a number of folks get that. That's why you certainly see things like the new miniseries. You see Jim Cameron's film. You see Walter Lord's book, A Night to Remember, which talks about human stories. What archaeology tells us about shipwrecks is something that goes beyond the stories that are written down. It's stories that otherwise wouldn't have been presented because they were forever silenced, seemingly so, when a ship sank. They're stories that otherwise don't get told, stories of people who didn't speak English, the stories of the people that were too poor, the people that were forgotten. And by understanding their stories through what's left behind of them, particularly in their bags that are down there, I think we come away with a better understanding of what Titanic really was.
Haven't you gone down to see the Titanic? Was that in a small sub?
It was. It's a very fascinating experience. I certainly haven't been down as much as others on Titanic. You probably need to go just once.
Well, James Cameron actually made a 3D movie going down there, so that must have taken him a lot more time. But how much can you see?
Well, you can see a fair amount, and I think when you're diving in the sub, the key thing that you're really getting at is you're down there, it's the reality of Titanic, but you're seeing it in a very small way, and that's through a porthole that doesn't give you much of a big expansive view. So the project in 2010 that Anthon wrote about really gave us the first comprehensive look at Titanic, Titanic 3D, Titanic with the entire site on, and as I said in the article, it's the type of view that we get as if you'd been trying to explore this massive site like a downtown urban center with the lights off in the middle of a storm, pitch black, and you've got a flashlight. All of a sudden, the lights are on, the sun is out, and you've got this view looking down at everything, and suddenly there are no more secrets, at least in terms of what's scattered and lying out there on the ocean bed.
Well, we have much more sophisticated photographic equipment these days. In Hampton, there's a large photo in the article that shows the entire crash site, including an unidentified piece of wreckage near the pieces of the hull. How could there be a piece that's still unidentified?
Well, I mean, you know, this is the first time that we actually have this image to begin to look at. And, you know, it's spread out over 200 acres of the ocean floor. And, you know, I think what's important about this is that we can now begin to see patterns. We can begin to see how the stern part of the ship corkscrewed and tumbled as it descended and spit out all these contents. And you have to have people who already know the ship, every inch of it, to sort of analyze what these parts are. Now, what is that thing over there? Well, that's most likely a piece of the double hull or whatever like that. And there's only, you know, so many people who know the ship that well. So it's just a very time-consuming process of looking at pieces in the murk and trying to put a label on them. And once you understand what they are, then you can work backwards and try to figure out how it got off the ship.
Now, Jim, some of it looks pretty clear. Like there's a photo of I guess it's the hull with railing, and it looks like what I would expect the a deck on the ship on a ship to look like. You're using a high definition broad scale imaging technique that's new to this kind of a photographing of a shipwreck.
Well, what was deployed there was a very high-resolution multi-beam sonar that gives us crisp imagery. We've never been able to do this at depth with a site like this before, and also merge that digitally in the lab with 2 and 3D grabs from the cameras that have gone over the site. When you stitch all that together, what you have is a three-dimensional view of Titanic as if you are virtually raising it. And indeed, that's what's happened not only with the project, but with the article in National Geographic and also with an upcoming History Channel documentary that has a group of the wonks that have worked with us reassembling Titanic in a virtual hangar. It's unbelievable to watch on the screen, but they literally take the pieces that we've seen on the bottom and put them on the screen back into the ship. Exactly as Hampton talks about. That's never been done before. And in many ways, I think this is a game changer for how we do archaeology at depth. And I think that's important because the technology that's been deployed here is more than just something that will aid or satisfy the curiosity of folks. It really gives us an innovative way to deal not only with things at the bottom of the ocean, but up in space. And the same type of technology that's deployed on Titanic can be used to affect one day to map and deal with asteroids covered with rich, rare minerals.
What kinds of things can be learned from looking at the seafloor patterns that were caused by the wreck?
We can see how the ship did break apart. We can see exactly when it fractured, not only what fell where, but exactly what it was. And in that, we've come away with a pretty critical understanding now of one, I think, rather important point on Titanic, and that is when Titanic split and broke, roughly 10% of the ship fractured and ultimately fell as a disintegrated bit of Titanic to the seabed. 90% of Titanic is represented by its more or less intact stern and bow sections. And in those sections, we now know almost everything that was inside Titanic remains. So in many ways, Titanic is not a vast scattered field of wreckage that comprises everything that was. It's still very much a time capsule, albeit a cracked one, with the majority of the things that speak powerfully to those people and their lives still inside the ship.
I'm speaking with Dr. Jim Delgado, an expert on shipwrecks and undersea excavation, director of the Maritime Heritage for the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, and with Hampton Sides, who wrote an article, the lead article in the current issue of the National Geographic magazine, called Unseen Titanic. And Hampton, you say that the ship corkscrewed as it went down. Why, do we know why it went through that kind of a weird configuration?
Well, we're talking here about the stern section of the ship. It didn't have that sort of aerodynamic leading edge that the bow had. When, you know, at the surface, it broke in half. It cracked in half. And the bow went forward more or less intact. The stern, however, because it didn't have that kind of edge, had a much more turbulent, much more traumatic trajectory as it descended. And so most of the pieces in the debris field that we see in this image that's published in the magazine are coming from the stern section. They're pieces of the stern that broke off as it descended.
Now, we have some images from the article on our show page at WNYC.org, although you have a lot of pictures in this issue of National Geographic. Jim, haven't photos of the Titanic sister ship Olympic been used to learn what the interiors would have looked like? How close to identical were the two ships?
The two ships were very similar, and in that, and particularly with the third sister ship, Britannic, Titanic historians like Bill Sauter or Ken Marshall at Park Stevenson have been able to do a fair amount of match and mix, and comparing it has been made a little easier. There's also a number of detailed plans and drawings, but what really made this happen was the type of work that was done by the technical team, in particular the guys at Woods Hole Oceanographic Institution's Advanced Imaging and Visualization Laboratory. Bill Lang, Evan Kovacs, and their team spent untold hours not only gathering this data, but digitally stitching it together, and at such high resolution so that you could now zoom in on a rivet pattern, see how portholes are spaced, get into the details of machinery, and that's allowed the other guys to say, yes, that's exactly what that is. And that work continues now, and it also includes the smaller pieces. So, for example, Bill Sauter recently was identifying one of the rotating doors that came out of one of the interior compartments. They can even get down to a pattern of bent piping that shows them exactly where in the hull they were. And that type of work, both with photography now at a never-before-seen scale, as well as the archival evidence from the past, has really given us this most complete picture ever of Titanic.
Now, Hampton talked about how it corkscrewed as it went down. And the Titanic is usually portrayed as going down in a quiet and stately way. Why wouldn't the ship have just filled with water and sunk straight down? Is that what usually happens with a wreck of this sort?
Well, you know, the hydraulics of it, I think that people think it went quietly beneath the waves because it was such a dead calm night that night. It was, you know, there was no waves to speak of. It was perfectly still. And, of course, that's not what happened. Once it filled up with water and began to descend, there was all kinds of hydraulic forces that are working on it and, you know, ripping off cranes and the poop deck twists over itself. And, you know, it's a very different kind of understanding. When I started this project, I had no idea that it was like this.
There was a recent auction of things that have come out of the Titanic. Have they been dredged up, or are they the things that wound up washing up on shore at St. John's, Newfoundland?
Well, there's a number of artifacts that have been recovered by RMS Titanic Incorporated, which has permission from the court to do that, and they've been working since 1987, and they stopped their recoveries in 2004. And some 5,000 pieces that they picked up from the scattered field outside the hull are what have been the subject of the auction, which just is wrapping up now, and we don't know the results yet. There are other pieces that floated to the surface, and a number of those, including hundreds of bodies, were recovered and taken back to Halifax. It's the largest Titanic cemetery, actually, is there in Halifax, and a number of those artifacts through the years have been sold. The collection raised by RMS Titanic is going to be transferred in one complete lot under the direction of the U.S. court. You can't buy them individually on eBay. That collection has to be transferred to a new custodian who will make them available and accessible to the public and for further study, and it will have to also put up a $5 million escrow fund to make sure the artifacts are preserved in the future. So in many ways, whoever acquires that collection and the imagery that that came out of the expedition inherits a very strong role and a very big responsibility, not unlike adopting, not to make fun of it, but, you know, adopting a kid.
Now, Hampton, you went to see the Las Vegas exhibit of Titanic artifacts collected by RMS Titanic. Can you explain why RMST is so scorned by the scientific community?
Well, there are a range of opinions about how this how these artifacts should be handled, and there are certainly purists like Bob Ballard who has said, and of course he was the co-discoverer of the wreck back in 1985. He takes the position that nothing should ever have been brought up, that it's a hallowed site, it should be left as a memorial, and nothing but images should be brought back from it. So some of the scholars are critical of the very idea that anything was brought back. In the early days, the company, under a different management, did undertake some of their salvage operations in maybe a less than professional way. There were some unsavory characters on their board. They've gone through a number of personnel permutations over the years, and it's really only in the last several years that they've kind of come around to this position that that Jim is talking about, which is that they are custodians of this wreck, and they need to start cooperating with the experts, not fighting with them. The thing in Las Vegas is actually very well done. Once you kind of get over the fact that you're in Vegas in the Luxor Hotel right next to a striptease show, once you kind of get over that kind of aspect of it and you go into the show itself, it's actually extremely well done and very moving, and I think speaks to this whole issue of, you know, should we bring up artifacts or not? I think if it's well done, if it's professionally curated and well thought out, I think it has a very important role to play.
Now, Jim, what about you? Isn't it appropriate to strip the Titanic and then put next to a striptease show?
Well, RMS Titanic in the past has been guilty, at least, of exceedingly bad judgment in public relations. And that's been said for a long time, and I've been one of the staunchest critics of their activities. Where we're at now is, as Hampton says, they've had a change in management and a change in their modus operandi. They've also been operating under the direction of the United States District Court, which has worked with them to establish certain ground rules. They have not been able to go into the hull and take things out. And the transfer of the collection, like I said, it has to be in one large lot. It has to be maintained as a publicly benefiting entity. It has to be backed with money to make sure it doesn't fall apart. And we've heard rumors that as this transfer is going to take place, there are a variety of folks who are seeking to acquire it, including, as we've heard, some museums, which might make a more interesting, better venue in the eyes of some than the current display site. The problem that a number of archaeologists have with something like Titanic is the entire thought of the role of the private sector and how do you make money from something like this without selling off the artifacts, because that's a problem for archaeologists. You don't sell your data. If you were writing a biography of a key figure, say, let's say Abraham Lincoln, you shouldn't be doing your research and paying for it by selling off every rare letter that you've read of Lincoln's or cutting up his diary and selling it page by page. And that's how archaeologists have seen activities in the past, both from treasure hunting, salvage, and some have laid this criticism at the foot of RMS Titanic. What they've done, though, is they've operated in accord with the instructions of the court. They've held the collection together, and their recoveries have been technically good. They've not been archaeological, but they've been technically, you know, competent recoveries. What we see at NOAA is a commitment to try to do the right thing. That was made clear to us, and that's why we ultimately joined on this Look, Don't Touch expedition to learn more about Titanic and to bring back these images. And that's why we continue to look at this in that way. It's a very pragmatic view, but it's one in which we have to balance what folks say on different ends of the spectrum, try to come up with something that suits best what people want and what is in the public benefit. And clearly what people want to see is Titanic not only preserved and protected, but also they want to be able to physically interact through a museum display, through the articles that you see through the television specials. People do still feel compelled by Titanic.
Dr. Jim Delgado is the Director of Maritime Heritage for the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, in charge of a new project to digitally photograph and map the Titanic's crash site on the ocean floor. He's been talking with us along with Hampton Sides, who is the author of the lead story in the current issue of National Geographic magazine called Unseen Titanic. Thank you both so much, and maybe I'll see you on the Titanic Memorial Cruise. that's now putting out to sea. Thank you so much.
Great being with you.
Thank you.